Hi, fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow book binger, and you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. I wanted to do something fun for the last episode of the season, so I decided to pick four flash fiction stories from four different authors. Two of the stories are being featured in a brand new anthology from Havoc, and two of them are from deep in the Havoc archives, but they are handpicked by me because I adore the stories and the authors. It's an eclectic collection with a magic school setting, a bittersweet love story, a steampunk, and a Wizard of Oz story, so there's something for everyone. I want to make sure you get to know a little bit about all the authors today, because each one is worth your attention, so I'll introduce each author and story as we go. Be sure to stick around at the end for info about our giveaway and our Listener's Choice Award. I need your votes to pick a winner. The first story is easy to introduce because it's one of my own, and it's narrated by my brother, Peter Franson. It's about a boy who visits a phoenix hatchery and discovers a secret not just about phoenixes, but about himself. Last summer, I submitted A Dying Phoenix to Havoc on a whim, and in addition to being published, it went on to be picked for the Reader's Choice Award for their Season 10 anthology, Legendary. That anthology was published just last week, and it has over 30 fantastic flash fiction stories if you're looking for more great stories and authors. I also recently found out A Dying Phoenix was chosen as a finalist for the Realmmakers Short Story Fiction Award. The winner will be announced at their dinner in July. Frankly, I will be a winner even if I don't win, because the winner will have to give a speech, and it's one thing for me to hide in my closet and read you all a bunch of stories, and it's another for me to stand up on a stage and put two words together. Regardless, I'm so grateful for the amount of love people have shown for this story. Please enjoy A Dying Phoenix by Corinne Norton.
Lyric's quill scratched across his parchment faster than the other mages in training, but he was still too slow to keep up with their bestiary professor. The old man's robes dragged through phoenix droppings inside the hatchery. He smiled as they reached the nesting trees in the heart of the habitat, where at least 100 phoenixes sat on their eggs.
"It's a little known fact that not all phoenixes are reborn."
Professor Dilbridge clucked his tongue and held out a shaky hand to the bird. His tremors had gotten worse this year, and he'd yet to take on an apprentice.
"One in four lacks the attribute for rebirth."
The phoenix spread her wings, their span matching Lyric's lanky height. Her feathers flashed ruby and bronze with flecks of pale yellow, like the witch hazel petals they'd ground up in the apothecary. She nudged the professor with her burnished ochre beak. Lyric stepped closer to the nearest brooding mother, tucking his quill and parchment in his robe pocket. He couldn't tear his gaze from the phoenix's scarlet eyes.
"Is there a way to tell which ones will return?"
Professor Dilbridge stepped back as the phoenix stirred.
"It looks like you're about to find out. Keep your distance."
The phoenix nudged the deceptively plain egg. A hairline fracture graced its surface, the shell finally chipping when the tiniest beak broke through. A chorus of admiration broke out. Professor Dilbridge chuckled as a sticky peach ball emerged, angling blindly toward its mother. Something in Lyric warmed, like he'd returned from school and his mother's bread had just come out of the oven. He rubbed at his chest, relishing the strange sensation. The mother squawked and sat on her baby, startling several of the onlookers.
"Wait for it," Professor Dilbridge murmured.
Flames shot out from the nest, engulfing both mother and chick. Cries of dismay filled the hatchery before shifting to wonder. Lyric's chest turned cold. Professor Dilbridge stepped closer as the flames died down.
"When a phoenix is born, the mother must test if the nestling will be reborn."
He pulled on the thick gloves, then dug through the ashes before pulling out a single pale pink chick, but no peach ball. Only the mother had returned.
She killed her own baby?
Lyric's throat grew tight, his voice pained.
She tested it,
Professor Dilbridge corrected, but his eyes held sadness.
It's the way of nature.
He passed the nestling off to a senior student headed for the artificial hatchery when another phoenix roused in her nest.
Looks like we get to try our hand again.
Professor Dilbridge beckoned them all over. Lyric lagged behind, his heart heavy. This time, a fuchsia nestling broke free from its egg, squawking as if it knew its fate. The warmth returned to Lyric's chest, but this time the heat made him double over. Fire rolled through his torso in waves, and his focus wavered until the phoenix burst into flames.
Are you all right?
Professor Dilbridge placed a hand under Lyric's elbow. The fire in Lyric's chest dissipated along with the flames in the nest.
Yes, I just got dizzy, he mumbled.
Professor Dilbridge eyed him suspiciously, then retrieved two nestlings from the ashes. The students cheered, but Lyric stayed quiet, his gaze straying to the first empty nest.
Come, Professor Dilbridge said. This next nest holds several eggs, most of them abandoned by mothers forced to go through their rebirth early.
As the others continued, Lyric stepped up to the first nest, running a finger through the warm ashes. Fluttering heat coursed through him again, the warmth of a single precious life. He soon rejoined the others, his heart no longer in the lesson. Professor Dilbridge moved aside a brooding phoenix, ignoring her pecking, and revealed six eggs.
Feel how warm they are?
The students placed palms on eggs. Lyric hesitated, then tentatively let the tips of his fingers graze the hard shell of the one nearest him. The same sense of home flooded him, and he relaxed against the egg. He let his hand graze a second one, but gasped as fire engulfed his chest. He pulled his hand back as though burned. Carefully, he tested the other eggs, feeling for warmth versus fire. Only the second egg held the heat of infinite lifetimes.
This is the only phoenix that will be reborn.
Lyric winced as he touched the egg. Classmates tittered, but Professor Dilbridge's gaze sharpened as he let the phoenix return to her eggs. Lyric hesitated.
Can't you feel it?
Class dismissed, Professor Dilbridge said. Lyric, stay with me.
The students whispered and lingered, while Professor Dilbridge led Lyric to a secluded fourth nest where another mother moved aside to let her baby hatch.
Tell me, Professor Dilbridge whispered. Which is it?
A light amber bird emerged, and Lyric sensed hot chocolate and winter blankets. His heart sank. Something in him snapped. He bolted forward as the mother phoenix squatted over her baby.
No!
Lyric ignored his professor's warnings, reaching beneath the phoenix and fumbling for something soft and fragile. He hissed when the beak pricked his fingertip, but he wrapped his hand around the baby, pulling it to safety as the mother erupted in flames. Lyric fell back, blocking his eyes and tucking the bird inside his robes.
What were you thinking?
Professor Dilbridge bent over Lyric, eyes wide as he checked for injuries.
This one won't be reborn.
Lyric pulled the tiny nestling out from under his robes. The bird leaned into his hand.
He only has one life to live.
The professor straightened, face slack.
He deserves to live it.
Would he receive demerits? Be sent home for his reckless behavior? Professor Dilbridge's eyes glistened, his voice harsh.
In 60 years, only 4 students have had the gift, but you...
His gaze held wonder.
You're the first to save a dying phoenix.
He helped Lyric to his feet.
Come. Today, you start training as my apprentice.
I hope you enjoyed listening to A Dying Phoenix by Corinne Norton, narrated by Peter Franson of Christian Geek Central. You should all know where to find more of my books by now, but just in case, I'll have a direct link in the show notes to my website, where you can snag the prequel to my epic fantasy series, as well as a link to the Havoc anthology that came out last week. This next story is also in the anthology, and it's written by Ruth Wynn. As a child of immigrant parents, Ruth found her place to belong in fictional worlds. Her classical education, studies at the Author Conservatory, and voracious reading habit fuel her quest after truth and beauty. When she's not writing magical characters finding victory in darkness, she can be found reading Shakespeare, singing opera, and training her dogs in rural South Carolina. Her story, Sea Flash, hits that poignant balance of tragic and hope that I always find myself drawn to. And since it was also chosen for the legendary anthology, I know I'm not the only one who loved it. I'll be sure to tell you more about Ruth and her books in a few minutes. But for now, please enjoy Sea Flash by Ruth Wynn. Most who sail the sea are afraid of enduring a storm. I'd not be anywhere else for all the gold on all the islands, because I only see him when lightning strikes the ocean. Raindrops plummet down my neck, each dying quick deaths in the jade dark waves. Night thickens around me and my coracle bobs beneath, rolling me away from my own ship at my back. My eyes scan the torrent-scarred horizon for the first white flash. I can never decide whether the lightning draws the ghost vessel from below the surface or places it there from above. I had asked him once. He said he could not tell. Even when his 10 years are up and he can set foot on land again, it's likely the mysteries of my husband's servitude will only come to me like echoes in a seashell. A captured reflection of the ocean, and not the ocean itself. But that does not matter when the storm rives the sky and his ship appears. I press forward. My love is waiting. These oars are not made of a size for a woman, but those who scoff at my strength would cease laughing if they saw me row. Cold rain stings my arms, but they burn with exertion and with hope. Hope keeps us both afloat, him and I. Me, sane when I should be mad. Him, alive among the dead. Another diamond flash illuminates the prow of his ghost ship. How do I look from his vantage point? Like the souls he ferries to the other side, just before they drown? Rising over my little boat, fingers of frigid water claw my body and snap, drenching me further. I shake them off, blinking away their icy touch. You will not have me. I board his ship alive. The storm laughs back in a crash of thunder, as if it heard me. I hope it can. I hope it tells the sea that it can curse my husband, but not take him from me. For 7 years I've cheated it in exchange for the fleeting, forbidden moments we share on board the ship of the lost before he must send me away. I can survive 3 more. The next bolt is meant to frighten me. I know it. I spit salt, whipping my soaking locks out of my face and heaving my shoulders back. The sea answers, rearing its head, and for a moment, I see the horses the ancients believed pulled Poseidon's chariot. Do your worst. I'm a fool to shout it, except I've survived its worst already. Faster than sight, the lightning beacons the way once, twice, a dozen times, helping me even as it threatens me. Thunder crackles, but the roar in my ears warns me of another wave. Nearly there. With a haul of my arms, the boat clambers up a tilted wall of water, tipping upwards as the billow stretches out translucent green. My heart spills out of place, and the oars bite into my hands. But with a splash, we drop on the other side. A few more strokes. Wind tackles me. A second swell catches the coracle, and it roils. A third hurls me into midair. The oars tear my skin as the sea sucks them below. I hit the water. My body spins downward. Every nerve screams against my gritted teeth. My hand breaks through to the rain-specked air before the sea claims me again, trying to bury me without earth. No. The lightning shows me the way up. I climb towards it, hand over hand, kicking myself free, lungs writhing. Air, air, air. Air. My head shatters the surface. I gulp oxygen and rain, both burning my throat. Waves pound my body, but I am free. Before I find my bearing, my shoulders slam against crusted wood. The ship. Something slaps the water, snaking dark and twisted through the froth. A rope. It slips through my numb fingers, and I snatch again, the effort searing my arm. The coarse hemp scrapes my palm, and I cling with all my strength. The rope tautens, drawing me upwards against the stinging torrent. White light plays like hearth fire on a face above me. I gasp as hands grasp me, and I tumble over the side. His arms tighten around me, strong, safe, warm. Murmuring my name, his hoarse whisper cuts through the bellowing of the gale. His tattered coat circles my shoulders with his familiar smell of salt and smoke. He leans his head back to gaze at me. You shouldn't have come. The trails of wetness on his face are more than the storm's blood, as are those on mine. Where else would I be? I bury my head on his shoulder, and his roughened fingers tangle in my hair. Look. Calling me out of my shelter, he points out across the distance that nearly swallowed me. The last broken shards of my coracle collapse beneath the ocean's buffeting and disappear. Your boat's lost, he says. Lost at sea. He speaks the words all sailors dread with a fierce quietness. What does that mean? My cheek leaves the sodden linen of his shirt. It means you are too. His fingertips trace the curve of my chin. On this ship, only those lost at sea can stay aboard. What? I glance from him to the place where the coracle sank and back again. I can stay. His brow touches mine. I catch my breath. Forever? I'm not captain forever. The joy in his voice reaches my bones. I wrap my arms around him, his solid frame the antithesis of the shifting and treacherous ocean. 3 years at sea is a short enough voyage compared with the eternity I've just crossed. The lightning shines brighter on us than starlight. I hope you enjoyed listening to Sea Flash by Ruth Wynn, narrated by Corinne Norton. If you want to read more by Ruth, it's coming, but you'll have to sign up for her newsletter to keep track of it. I'll have a direct link to her Instagram and sign-up page in the show notes, and I'll even throw the Havoc Anthology link in there a second time because I really think you all would love it. This next story can be found deep in the Havoc archives, and it's written by Katherine Briggs. Katie crafted her first monster story at age 3. Since graduating from crayons to laptop, she continues to devour and weave fantasy tales while enjoying chai tea. She lives outside Houston with her co-adventurer husband and rescue dog, and she classically educates amazing middle school students, teaches ESL to adults, and enjoys studying other languages. Her flash fiction story, The Tinker, is a fun little steampunk story that leaves me wanting more in this world. Okay, I won't make you wait any longer. Please enjoy The Tinker by Katherine Briggs.
When fleeing the country, was it normal to feel like a rat stuck on a skinny branch above a pack of snarling wolves? Even though tonight I would leave forever, I swept dust off the floors, checked for cobwebs in the spick and span nooks and corners, and comforted myself that I would no longer face this tangle of shelves, gadgets, and shadows every evening. Time to hang up the family apron and forget our hoarded secrets for good. Except Grandfather's book. Blocks away, assessor's warning cries ripped the air. They didn't want me. Yet. Still, I cringed before recounting today's sales, and cringed again. Ouch. Father and grandfather would roll over in their graves. I couldn't even hold one of our firecracker candles to their craftsmanship. Yet I wore our surname Fidger as a sobriquet and undeserving credential. Everybody needs something fixed, or a new doodad to make life a pinch easier, especially on the cheap. That's how we tinkers stick around through thick and thin. How many times did they tell me that? How about tinkers who can't think up new doodads? I would retort silently. I dragged my palm across my prickly stubble, then reached around my neck for the chain and attached sound recording gizmo, Father's greatest contraption. To me, anyway. I clicked its tiny widget for courage, and Melody's sugar-sweet recorded voice floated to my ears like a song. Oh, Fidger. The most beautiful wind chimes couldn't compete with her laugh. I'm not sure what to say. So many things. How about, I love you very much, forever and ever. My cheeks warmed. I was the luckiest guy in the world having a girlfriend like that. Why couldn't everyone see her as I did? Then we wouldn't have to run before the assessors studied her pretty face and spied the unwanted blood lurking high in her family tree. Before the borders closed tonight. Stupid war. My heart squeezed. She was waiting for me with the last 2 train tickets. I'd worked long, grueling hours for those. Saving the damsel, escaping the bad guys. Why didn't I feel like a hero? Time for final packing. I snagged practical wares like warming blankets, flexible indestructible boots, medicines to cure frightfulness and queasiness, and glowing lights to see by, though I forewent the umbrella hats, recording contraptions, and one-time-use flying messenger devices. My mind traipsed to the hidden cabinet beneath the selling counter, holding the remains of grandfather's dabblings before they were deemed illegal. Since childhood, I'd carried his book of secrets in my breast pocket and dreamed of replicating his invisibility blanket, originally intended to conceal messes from surprise guests. But I'd either fail miserably, as usual, or be caught trying. I shuffled my feet toward the front door to hang the closed sign. One last time, I sucked in a breath, lifted the placard, and imagined Father's shop ransacked like so many abandoned others. Did I double-check the storage room? Couldn't leave a hungry sneak varmint trapped back there, even if it had never happened before. I dashed to the back room, then heard a scuffle of movement. Not a varmint. Late-night customers? I circled around and found the shop empty. Yanking my shoulders down, I shut off the remaining lights, secured the closed sign, and fished the old key from my trouser pocket. I froze. An intruder's eyes glinted like coals in the darkness. His small, shadowed form stood pressed against a shelf.
"Please."
His young, wide eyes and accent betrayed him. An unwanted hid in my shop. My insides turned over. Assessors bellowed. Things crashed and shattered outside, surely from the business next door, followed by tempests of cussing. What should I do? Hail the authorities? Run and leave him? I recoiled and glanced at the waif again, and saw the unmistakable hint of her. Melody. Choking, I raced to the hidden cabinet and hissed, "Hold still."
"Please remain functional."
I flung the invisibility blanket over the boy. Assessors tore the shop door off its hinges, their shining uniforms, glistening weaponry, and glaring hatred blinded me. I nearly fainted. They growled. One spoke.
"Have you seen an unwanted?"
I pursed my lips and said nothing. They shoved past me and roamed the shop, knocking goods over and muttering. At last, they left via the gaping doorway.
"Breathe."
The invisible spot hugging the shelf remained still. I set the door back on its hinges, swiped damp hands down my apron, and staggered forward to grab a recorder. Tears rolled down my cheeks as I captured my own shaky voice.
"Melody, I love you. Please, wait for me."
Then I emptied the contents of the register. Tiny fingers emerged from the blanket. I grasped them, whispered directions to her hiding place, and handed over the recorder, cash, and surely my heart. Like a wisp of smoke, the unwanted fled the shop, for the border. After a long moment, I tore my gaze away and considered the mess surrounding me. It looked like I needed to start tinkering with Grandfather's book after all.
I hope you enjoyed listening to The Tinker by Catherine Briggs, narrated by Peter Franson of Christian Geek Central. In addition to being one of my closest writing friends, Katie is the fantastic author of The Eternity Gate, the first book in a YA fantasy duology put out by Enclave. The second book comes out this fall, and I can't wait to read it. While we're all waiting, you can head to Katie's website and sign up for her email newsletter to grab her short story collection, Experiments and Enchantment. I'll have the direct link for it in the show notes. If you enjoyed listening to Pater narrate either my story or Katie's, you might also enjoy listening to his podcast, Christian Geek Central, where he discusses movies, video games, and all things enjoyed by self-proclaimed geeks from a Christian worldview. This last story is kind of the reason I had this whole idea. One of my very favorite authors doesn't write short stories, and it made me sad that I had no excuse to invite her to be featured on the podcast. Until I discovered something so far back in the Havoc archives that it's not even in their digital archives, but their old magazines. It was a fun little story featuring a munchkin who's destined to save Oz, and it was written by Nadine Brandis. Nadine is the author of 6 young adult books that range from dystopian to historical fantasy. Her dystopian Out of Time series is one of my son's favorites, and her fantasy Wishtress is one of mine. She is an adventurer with 4 kids all born in the last 6 years, and she loves Jesus, Harry Potter, and Fiddler on the Roof. I haven't actually sat through a complete viewing of that last one, so maybe I should revisit it. I'll have more info on Nadine's books in a few minutes, but for now, please enjoy Great and Powerful by Nadine Brandis. The yellow brick road was covered in blood. I stumbled around a pool of putrid muck, my bare feet chafing against the cracked bricks. My gloved fingers slid into my pocket and wrapped around a slender wand. A shock ran through my body, The same as when Glinda first handed it to me through the bars of her cell. What did the flying beasts do to her? Which did they harvest for the Monkey King? Her brain or her heart? It didn't matter. She was dead. And I carried her final spell. What if I forgot her instructions? What if the monkeys saw past the straw and burlap of my scarecrow disguise? What if the weapon in my belt pouch didn't actually work? I'd remain Brix the Cowardly Munchkin forever, and Munchkinland would fall. Deep breath. What had Glinda said? Take the wand to your homeland. Plunge it into the ground. Save the last Ozians. Weak-limbed, I crested a hill and saw it. Munchkinland. The once colorful tree houses were nothing more than charred blobs in burned trees. Lining the brick road between me and Munchkinland waited a dark army of flying monkeys. Some hovered in the air, while others directed groups of scarecrows and tin people. Glinda's wand vibrated in my pocket. If ever there was a time to be brave, it was today. The Emerald City had fallen. I was Oz's last hope. I checked my straw stuffing, took a deep breath, and stumbled down the hill. Monkeys screeched. I kept my eyes down, trying to approach without any evidence that my brain remained in my skull or my heart in my chest. Could they hear my pounding pulse? Could they sense my spinning thoughts? A grizzled monkey landed by me. I stifled a gasp. He poked me. I flinched, and a second monkey landed. Just keep walking. I trudged past scarecrows bandaging monkey wings and tin people oiling bowstrings, preparing for the final attack on Munchkinland. Beneath those burlap and tin faces, would I recognize any of these slaves? No matter. Their brains and hearts were gone. And if I didn't get Glinda's wand to Munchkinland, I'd share their fate. The circling monkey tugged at the pouch on my belt. In reflex, I snatched it away. He screeched and grabbed my arm, dragging me away from the slaves. Now I'd done it. We weaved through clumps of soldiers until I ended up in front of a colossal monkey. He huddled by a fire, wings folded tight against his muscled back. An emerald crown rested on his head. The Monkey King. He raised his eyes.
Ah, good. More fodder for the fire.
Fodder? My gaze darted to the flames, lapping at straw hats and torsos and limbs. Oh my. They were about to discover my secret. The monkey minions attacked with delighted cackles. Claws ripped into my skin. Joints popped. I screamed. They froze. The king straightened.
This one talks.
I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think. Then, delivery for you, sir. I plunged my hand into my pouch and withdrew my only other weapon. A crumpled red poppy. I held it out. The Monkey King slapped my hand away, and the poppy tumbled into the fire. No.
You are an Ozian fool.
The poppy burst into flames, sending up puffs of crimson smoke.
You really thought you could deceive me?
His gaze slid to his soldiers.
Tear her apart.
I fumbled for Glinda's wand, but a monkey yanked me backward by my hair. The monkey king waved away the poppy smoke. A soldier coughed, and I held my breath. The next pull at my hair felt weaker. His grip loosened. Then the king's knees buckled.
"What did you?"
He looked toward the burned poppy stem. His minions collapsed, one by one, releasing me.
"Her poppy?"
His lids closed, his wings drooped, and then he fell, unconscious, into the fire. Flames caught his fur. Burned hair mingled with the sweet, sleep-inducing poppy smoke. I clapped a hand over my nose and mouth and lurched away from the fire, most of my disguise shredded or gone. But the wand was still safe in my pocket. Screeches filled the air. They were coming for me. I ran, out of poppies and out of time. I didn't dare waste Glinda's spell on defense. My feet slapped the crumbling brick, propelling me toward Munchkinland. So close. A monkey dove for me. I ducked. Another one grabbed my shirt, tearing it. I hurtled past the burned tree gate and into the town square, where the yellow brick road ended in a swirl.
"Ozians! Munchkins! I'm here!"
A few Ozians popped their heads from hideouts. I dropped to my knees and plunged Glinda's wand into the dirt at the very tip of the yellow brick road. Everything calmed for a moment, like a great inhale. Then wind exploded around me, flinging the monkeys back. Ozians screamed. Lightning struck Glinda's wand and it shattered.
"No!"
I grappled for the pieces, but a monkey snatched me into the air. My cry disappeared in the thunderous wind, swirling, tumbling. Debris climbed through the twister. A white fence post spiraled toward me. I welcomed it. It struck, and all went black. Spinning. Warmth. Voices? I fought for consciousness. Someone tugged at my arm. No. I didn't want to be burned in the monkey fires. Leave my brain alone. Light pressed against my eyes. My lids flickered. Bright blue. Sky? I sat up, dizzy. My vision cleared. A girl with brown braids and a blue checkered dress stood before me. I lay in a wheat field without a single treehouse or emerald spiral on the horizon. I finally took in the girl's face. I'd seen its portrait in every city hall.
Dorothy?
She smiled.
"They say you saved them all."
A group of wind-swept munchkins huddled behind her. Their faces displayed an emotion I'd never before seen directed toward me. Pride. I swallowed hard.
Where are we?
Dorothy swept her arms wide.
Welcome to Kansas.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Great and Powerful by Nadine Brandis, narrated by Corinne Norton. Nadine has a brand new science fantasy book coming out in July called The Nightmare Virus. It's Inception meets Ready Player One, which means it would be an automatic buy for me even if it wasn't written by her. I'll have the pre-order link in the show notes. Don't forget, we're running another giveaway this month. You have only 4 more days to enter to win several fantasy audiobooks along with a 3-month Audible subscription. You can enter to win at findingfantasyreads.com/giveaway, and I'll have the link in the show notes. But wait, this is the final full episode of the season, and I have a very important task for you. I know I always close out the episode asking for you to leave a review or sign up for the newsletter, something to help grow the podcast and keep us connected. But today, I'm asking you to do one last thing for the season, and I would venture to say it's the thing I want you to do the most out of anything I've ever asked. I want you to vote for your favorite story on the podcast this first season. There are so many to choose from. I know it's going to be hard, but I have them all laid out on a Google form, and you simply have to click and submit. This award is more important to me than the others because this tells me what you want more of, and it tells the author just how much his or her stories are valued. And authors need to hear that. We're sort of a self-deprecating bunch, and an award like this can help us finish whatever tough chapter we're writing. So please go to findingfantasyreads.com/vote or click on the direct link in the show notes to place your vote. I'll be announcing the award winners on a short bonus episode in June. But otherwise, you all will have to wait until August 6th to hear my voice again. I appreciate you all so much. Thank you for listening, have a wonderful summer, and happy reading.